Hello and welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com. I'm Alan Jedi Zog. On the other side is John English, the Germs guy. We're here to talk yet another week of Jazz basketball. Hello, John.
Hello, Alan.
How are we doing today?
I'm a little sick, but I'm going to plow through because I'm a trooper.
Ah, we love our troopers.
I wanted to kind of talk about the positives of this season. Even though the Jazz have lost the last two, that Bulls win was so awesome that I'm still on a high from it.
Yeah, I think I am too. In fact, I'm having a hard time remembering any of the losses that have happened this week because that win was just so ginormous.
Well, I've been looking at, I keep using the Miami Heat win as a turning point for this team. Jazz have gone 7-6 since that win, and a lot of their losses are okay. I mean, they lost on the road against the Clippers, on the road against the Thunder, on the road against the Rockets. They lost Atlanta, which is like the best team in the East right now. So I think they're having a pretty good year. And I was going through some of their stats just from that point on, as I have been doing every week. And they're still showing up really good. Now, since that Miami game, Jazz are now the 9th best defense in the league. Did you ever think we'd get our defense into the top 10?
I figured if we did, it would be a bit of a... I thought it would take some time. I didn't think we'd be there that fast.
Overall, we're probably like 26, but since that Miami game, we're 9th.
Well, yeah, especially the turnaround that it is to go from last year. What did we say we were last year? 27th, was it last year?
No, we were dead last.
Were we dead last year? Okay. So to go from dead last to still remain down in the bottom, but then over the last, 13 games to be in 9th, that's impressive.
Yeah, and one thing I noticed is that going through the individual stats, there's something people probably didn't expect. Enes Kanter is actually having a decent defensive outing in this time period. In the 9 games that he's played in the last 13, his defensive rating is 99.5, which I find very encouraging for him.
That is. Actually, I'm glad you mentioned him. That is one player... with all the talk lately of Gobert, that's the one player I still wanted to step back on for just a minute because I was on board initially with the idea of moving on from Kanter this year. Felt like we saw a part of Kanter last year that many of us, I think, were ready to write him off. This year started much the same, but he's shown improvement. He really has with Quinn Snyder's offense and defensive sets. And just like you mentioned with his defensive rating, it's very clear to me that Kanter is starting to understand the game at another level and is starting to play a little better.
Yeah, he's still our leading offensive rebounder. During this stretch, he gets 3.2 offensive rebounds a game, which is much needed. Derek and Rudy are both at 2.7. So Enes is really active in that regard. He's 12.6 points and 7.2 rebounds in 25 minutes a game. So for that time, you stretch that out to per 36, and that's about what we'd hoped he'd be anyway. That's like a 16-9 guy at your per 36.
Those aren't bad numbers at all.
Nope.
So, I mean, you go back, who was the last Jazz player that averaged that? I think Paul Millsap as a secondary guy with Al Jefferson was that. I think you even go back before that, you had Mehmet Okur was right around that level, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
So if you can get that from a second big on the floor, your second, secondary big, that's not a bad thing at all.
One question we got about this week is about Dante Exum. And, some people are asking if Dante should start this year. It comes up a lot. Over the last 13 games, Dante is shooting 37.5 from the floor and 31.9 from three. And Trey Burke is shooting 38.4 with 31.3 from three. So between the two of them, they're shooting almost identical. And Trey's just doing other things better right now. Trey's actually getting to the free throw line more. He's up to almost three a game, which is really nice. I'd like to see him get more. Dante's still a little too tentative for that. He gets to the free throw line once every other game right now.
I wanna thank Brett, A24 Brett on Twitter for that question, because that actually fits right in with really the last two episodes that we've had and now this one. We've been fairly tough on Trey over the last two episodes. And so that question kind of fits perfectly. And I'm glad you answered it the way you did, because I am not, first of all, I'm one who's not ready to give up on Trey yet, because I don't think you can write the guy off yet. And I don't know that Dante is ready for the reins yet either. He looks timid at times on the court. At times, his first step, he blows by guys. He does things defensively. He does things well, but I'm not sure he's doing it at a consistently high level enough to where I'm comfortable with him at that starting position.
Yeah, defensively, Exum's still better, but Trey just has that confidence. Trey, no matter how bad his game was the night before, no matter how bad he's shooting at the time, he has that confidence that moving forward, this is going to work. And sometimes that's been to our detriment when he misses 11 threes in a game. But I think as the season progresses, and we can see this if we just look at the last month, where his season is getting better. I'm still, worried about Trey.
Right.
I don't think he's going to be a 10-year starter in the league, but I'm still okay with seeing how this plays out the rest of the year, having him be our starter the rest of the year, and just see how it goes from there. If he can get his shooting more accurate as we continue, and it's still kind of off, but it's better in this last period than it has been the first 25 games. So if he can just figure out a way to improve on that, then he can work on other aspects of his game. But overall, I would say that he is better equipped to start rather than Exum. And when Exum plays a lot, good things happen on defense. Offensively, though, he's just not there yet. And I'm really okay with him just being a bench player the rest of the year and just letting this development come naturally.
Let him gain some confidence.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I'm
looking at our... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm curious, though, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on it because we have lately, but, talk about Trey Burke, just over the last 6 days, there are 6 games he's played, though, has shown improvement in his shooting. I'm not sure what the average is, but I don't think he's seen a game in under 41% over the last 6 games from the floor, and right around that 37 to 38% from the three. So he's getting, it would seem to me, his shooting confidence is back or getting there.
Well, which game was it that he had that really bad shooting game? Was that the Hawks?
Yeah, that was that Atlanta game. But that one, take that one out of the mix, and since the very first Minnesota game, he really has put together a string of about 6 or 7 games that have been good. That Atlanta game being the exception.
Okay, so he had a really bad game against Atlanta, and his 4 games since have been pretty good for him. He scored 28, 6, and 6 in the Minnesota game. He missed the Pacer game with the flu, but he outplayed Derrick Rose in Chicago. That was something.
No, I agree. I totally agree.
Sorry, I just had to hit the cough button there.
Nope, you're fine.
Let's see. He's pretty good at the Thunder, if I remember right. Yeah, he had 20 points and 5 assists against the Thunder. He's 8 of 15, 2 for 4 from 3.
Yep.
And the Rockets, a lot of people had a bad game. How was he? He was 6 of 14, which is decent for Trey. So he was 16 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. But everyone had a bad game. He tied for a leading score in that game because no one else could score.
Well, and he played very well against Patrick Beverley on quite a few stints when Beverley was guarding him. Beverley seemed to be, I mean, Beverley's much quicker, but it seemed like he struggled to defend Trey at many points during that game. So I'm not sure that Trey's problems came against Beverley more than they did otherwise.
And he played decent defense on Beverley, too.
Yeah, he did.
Beverley never really found a rhythm. And one thing I heard Locke talking about the other day with the emergence of Rudy Gobert, and I actually listened to the Salt City Hoops this week, and Andy and Ben were talking about this, too. When you have Rudy Gobert in there and you have the confidence of a rim protector like that, then it lets the perimeter guys play more closely on their guys. And so maybe part of the defensive problems our wings and our guards have been having is that they just don't have as much faith in the help defense behind them. And now that Favors and Gobert are proving that they're a really good 1-2 defensive force in the back, maybe that's allowing our guards to play with more confidence and play more closely on the guys that they're on.
So that might take us very much into our next point. We talked about Cantor and his improvements, which are visible. Now you're talking about Gobert with the impact he's having on the court. John, where do we go from here? Where do the Jazz go from here? I mean, I would love to see a coach have a kind of problem where you've got three legitimate big men that have tools to offer you to win ball games, but you aren't sure which two you're going to start.
Yeah, I liked them easing Cantor back in. He only played 20 minutes, but he scored 16 points in that 20 minutes. So, you know, it's good for them to have a logjam in the big men's area.
Yeah.
All of our guards keep getting injured, but we finally have a decent crop of big men to choose from.
Who do you start going forward, though? I mean, after they've eased Cantor back in, if you're Quinn Snyder, what's your starting front court?
I don't know how you can take the starting job away from Rudy. I don't know. Maybe you do, but here's the thing: the Jazz had a really good offense at the beginning of the year and a really bad defense, and they were losing the majority of their games. And in this stint, in this 13-game stint where we've gone 7-6, the focus seems to have shifted to defense, where they're focused more on their defense, and their offense has suffered a bit. But that's okay, because their defense is actually winning them some games and keeping a lot of these games close. I mean, that Rocket loss, that was the first double-digit loss they've had since the Charlotte game, where it was 4 games in 5 nights.
And the Rockets still didn't reach 100 points, might I point that out. The Jazz still held them under the three-figure mark.
Exactly. Exactly. The last team to reach 100 was Indiana Pacers, and we had a ton of injuries in that game.
Yep. So, but again, that goes back to my question. I know you say this goes back to the post I wrote on Friday, Patience in Development. My question really is, and I completely agree with all of this, the caveat through all this, I completely agree that Gobert has made a case for himself. Absolutely, he has. And you almost force yourself to not bench him. You have to start him. But my concern in development going forward is you have just instilled confidence in Cantor over the course of, what are we now, 40-plus games, where Cantor has gotten better game by game by game. And that 13-game stretch we talk of has not all been Gobert. Gobert has started not even half of those amount of games during that time frame. Cantor started those other games, but you've seen Cantor's improvement. How does that hurt or stunt Cantor going forward if you decide to bring him off the bench and tell him, no, you know what, Gobert's our guy, this is where we're going? What does that do to Cantor and to his psyche, a guy who really has, as you've watched the last 2 years, has had his confidence built based on what he's done on the floor and based on guys working with him as closely as they have?
Yeah, and starting.
Yeah.
Cantor was playing really well before his injury. That's the other issue. He was reliably, I mean, he was more reliable for scoring in favors those few games before he finally went down.
Right.
And that's true. If you keep starting Gobert, is Cantor still going to be there for you? Are we still going to see improvement from him? Is he going to get discouraged that he's in his fourth year and still a bench guy if mm-hmm. we take that away from him? I know it hurt him last year when Ty wouldn't start him, when he lost his starting job. That he felt really set back by that. And if Quinn decides the same thing, you know, it can happen again. So that is a delicate question he can ask himself. Now, here's a possibility. If the Jazz have looked at Gobert and they're thrilled and they decide maybe we need to move Cantor, maybe you put him back in the starting lineup so you can showcase him and
yeah.
get some see what interest he draws as we approach the trade deadline.
Right.
So, I mean, Rudy is a competitor, and I can see Rudy being upset if he loses his starting position. I can also see him understanding. I mean, Cantor's been around longer. He only got it because of injury. He made the most of it, but now it's time for him to go back to the bench.
Right.
But if they can put him back on the bench and really balance the minutes between those three, between Favors, Cantor, and Gobert, and then you put in Booker when he's needed, that's a dance of egos that Quinn Snyder really has to think about.
This might be his first test, first legitimate tough test as a coach, to figure out how to probably stroke a couple of egos, work his magic a little bit to make things work. I mean, still a very young team and still a very young coach who, in my mind, as we've watched the team develop, I think we've watched the coach develop too. Quinn has gotten really good at calling timeouts at just the right time in games. I was just beaming over that the other day in the game against Oklahoma City, where and it's really funny too, because Ben Dowsett totally picked apart Scotty Brooks like the very next day about how bad of a coach Scotty Brooks is turning out to be, especially in his usage of timeouts and his players that he's putting on the floor. But that's the one thing about Quinn, is we're watching a young group develop, but we're watching a young coach develop and learn how to master the game. And he's doing really well.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. It's like, as the season goes on, he's doing things that I notice and I enjoy. I think he's better with his rotations. I think he's better with late game management. I think you can tell that some of the stuff he's doing is paying off. I mean, if the coach can call a timeout and not say anything and it works, that shows you that the players respect their coach.
Yeah.
If he can just call timeout and stare at them, and all of them know exactly what they did wrong and exactly what they need to do, I think that's great.
And I
think he's earned the trust from his players.
Absolutely. And he has, and his players have earned high praise from him. I mean, you've heard him speak about his players and the development and moving along that they've come. I mean, you know, the other day I read a piece from Ben talking about that very thing, where he spoke highly of Trey's progression on the defensive end. It's not just a symbiotic relationship. The players have gotten respect for their coach, and I think the coach is in turn respecting what he's seeing out on the floor from his players. And it's fun to watch between them. It's really fun to watch the chemistry between all of them.
Yeah. I wanted to kind of shift into kind of do a real quick improvements we're seeing. Let's touch on the rookies on what you're seeing, and then we'll go into the other players that have been here and what they're doing better this year compared to last year.
Okay.
So starting with the rookies, we'll say Dante Exum. How was he at the beginning of the year, and how is he now, and what has improved?
Eye test alone, confidence. His confidence is getting better. I mean, there are times in the beginning of the year where he was timid. I still think he is timid, but he's gotten better about moments where he's able to pick his moments just right on the offensive end. Defensively, I still think he relies a lot on his athleticism to get him to the right spots and move, but I think he's having a better understanding of where he's supposed to be on the floor. So really, I think his maturity level is, in minute amounts, is increasing and getting better.
Interesting. I found him more confident earlier in the season with his offense, and I think a series of losses and a series of running into better players kind of took that down a peg. But I've seen improvement in the defense. He looked lost a lot on defense early on, and I've seen a big change in that. He's getting better recognizing the situation and reading passing lanes defensively and being able to disrupt.
Well,
and I've been encouraged by his progress there.
I think I should take and clarify what I meant by his offense. His three-point shooting, I think you would agree, has been very good of late. And teams can't leave him alone out there anymore because he's making those open looks when he gets them. And then on the offensive end, maybe some of the other areas where his confidence isn't there, the one area that I think he's getting better at is his floor vision. He sees things and is able to find. In fact, I don't know who I was talking to the other day, but somebody mentioned to me that very thing, that it's interesting to watch Exum on the floor because it's almost like he sees certain plays offensively take place before they even do take place. The ball is right where it needs to be at just the right time from him. So in that aspect of his offense, I think is where I'm referring to, because yes, he is still shies away from doing quite a few things that he could do very well.
What about Joe Ingles? What do you think of Joe Ingles?
I like Joe. What is there not to like about Joe Ingles? That's the thing. I was watching him the other night against Oklahoma City, and I'm trying to find the right words to describe him, and I'm not sure I can. But the guy just does the right things at the right times in the right way. He makes the right passes. You know, he's not a great shooter, and you notice he does not have the shoot first mentality. He does not. He looks for his teammates and looks to get them involved, which I actually like in a player too. But it's almost like he's the crafty veteran, but he's not a veteran, but he plays like he is.
Yeah, he kind of is, because he's 27 and he's been playing for years overseas.
Right.
I'll tell you some things you cannot like about Joe. his outside shooting is bad.
Yes.
And that means that people are going to play way off of him because they know he can't shoot from outside. And even when he's inside, there are times when he's going to go for a layup and he should take it, and yet he still passes out. I think sometimes he overpasses. I mean, one of the reasons they had 30 turnovers in that Rockets game is because people were overpassing, and then Houston was just able to jump up and intercept passes and take off. I think the team's still trying to find the balance of being unselfish but not overpassing. When they overpass, and then no one wants to dare be the one to take the shot, then it's just that much easier for the other team's defense.
Right.
So my knocks on Joe would be, I'd say sometimes his outside shooting's bad, so I'm actually okay when he passes it up. But sometimes his inside shooting, he passes up shots, and it disrupts the flow of the offense when the offense is set up to get this shot open, and he's the guy there, and yet he still doesn't take it, and so the offense has to go through a couple more steps. I like Joe's toughness. Joe's Joe's the guy on our team who is willing to talk trash to the other team, to just kind of say little things or do little pokes to kind of get the other guys agitated, which is funny to watch. I'm trying to remember whose head he got into the other day, but he,
was that the one where he got the double technical?
Probably.
I'm trying to think of who it was too. I know what you're talking about, but I can't remember. Was it Westbrook?
Yeah, you remember it, but I don't remember who it was. I think Joe's ideally a bench guy, and there are times when he's in the game and he's not shooting or he's missing a shot. I can't remember the last time he made a 3-pointer, for instance. That's when I really miss Rodney Hood, and I keep wishing someone would tell me when he's going to come back. Rodney's shooting has been off, but Rodney's defense has been good, and I would like to see Rodney's development, because of the rookies, I don't think Joe's in the long-term plan. He seems like a great team guy, but he's not in the long-term plans. Rodney's in the long-term plans, and they need him to be healthy and developed. So I anxiously await his return. And in the meantime, we got some other rookies. Elliot Williams isn't a rookie, but we have Elijah Millsap. And we have the second coming of Elliot Williams. And I don't really remember Elliot Williams. I had to look his name up. Oh, he was a first round pick. Oh, he kind of went here. He didn't really do anything memorable in the league, and there's a reason that he was in the D League. So between those two, what have you seen from them?
Well, you said Elliot Williams, and I say who? Because I really don't know who Elliot Williams is. And until he played last night, I had no idea whatsoever. So I, like you, would have to look him up. Elijah, on the other hand, kind of had a good idea of him coming in. My question is, what is it with these Millsaps? Seriously, with the way they put forth the energy, the effort, they play hard. They just get out there and play. And I like Millsap because he does that. He shoots the ball pretty well too. So, but defensively, he's not going to shy away from anything. He gets out there, he plays tough. He plays other guys. He might overplay some things sometimes on the defensive end, but I like his grit and toughness.
Yeah, his defensive numbers have been really good, and I've really liked the speed and energy that he's brought to the game. Elliot, I think, is going to take a little bit to get into things. When he came into the end of the game and made his debut and made both points, both of his shots, it's like, finally, we have someone who can shoot. And then he played some more minutes and kind of came back down to earth on his shooting. But he's still, I think he, between them, is the better shooter. So I like him for that. Between the two, I think Millsap's a little better on defense. But we'll see. They're Band-Aid guys until we can get some of our normal rotation players healthy. We're not getting Burks back, so Elijah or Elliot really does have a decent chance of staying with the team the rest of the year.
Who do you think sticks around?
Well, I've seen more out of Millsap, so I would think he has the better chance. But, you know, we got these guys, and they're better positioned to get minutes over, like, Steve Novak. Steve Novak only goes into the game when things are going really bad or really good. Whereas we need guys in the 2-3 rotation spots to fill gaps. And Hayward, anytime he leaves, everything offensively goes way downhill. And Joe can't be the guy to replace Hayward, at least not offensively, because the shooting goes way down. And Hayward's shooting has really improved lately. I'll get into that later. So if we can have Millsap or Elliott be a good backup too, and kind of keep scoring alive, then I think we can hang on until Rodney gets back.
Right.
And then we need Rodney to be the shooter he was in college.
Nope, that's good. That's a good point.
And that's the rookie. So let's go to guys that... This isn't their first team with the Jazz, and what improvements we're seeing. Hayward, I'll tell you, in the past Okay, over these past 13 games, Hayward's shooting 44% from three.
Whoa.
It's nice to see that outside shot is coming back. He's 19.4 points, 4.6 assists, 3.8 rebounds. His rebounds are down a little bit, but that might be because Gobert is getting more minutes and rebounding's not necessary. He's getting to the free throw line. It's interesting. In this stint, Derek Favors is actually getting to the free throw line more than anybody, which is nice to see. He's getting there over six times a game. Derek's shooting's still good. He's like 53%. He's 16.6 and 9.2 rebounds in this 13 game stretch. He's 1.5 blocks a game. And between him and Gobert's getting 3.1 a game in this stretch. That's why their defense is ninth in the league now.
Well,
it's because they've learned how to play together.
Well, and back to the free throws a minute. My question, and you're talking about Favors getting to the line more, back to Hayward for a second. My frustration with Hayward, and I think Jazz fans all over the place might agree here, what is it going to take to get Hayward to the free throw line? Because how many times are we watching where Hayward's still not getting the respect he deserves from referees around the league? There's been, I can't tell you how many times over the last, you know, month or so that Hayward's gotten calls on either end of the floor that just, or not gotten calls on the offensive end. And I wonder, and Hayward seems to play through it and seems to be fine with it, still shows his fire, but at what point in time is Hayward going to start getting those calls? That's my question.
When the Jazz have a better record.
Yeah.
If you're the best player in a bad team, you haven't been to an all-star game. I mean, you've been to a Rising Stars Challenge, but you're in a small market, you're on a team with a losing record. I just think that's what it takes. You don't start getting superstar calls until you're a superstar.
All right.
And Hayward is on his way, and he has an argument for the all-star team. I'd have to double check, but I think there are still too many guys ahead of him.
Yeah.
But he's getting there. I think if he and Favors, if they can show him the improvement next year to the degree that they showed between last year and this year, then they both have a chance at the All-Star game next year.
Even in the tough, overly filled Western Conference.
Yeah, I do. Some of the guys in the West are getting older. This is probably Tim Duncan's last year.
Right.
You're gonna see other guys in the decline. There's always injuries to some people, so you can probably figure someone important's gonna go down. But he's demonstrating that. You look at I forgot my example, but like Kevin Love. Kevin Love started making All-Star games when his team was just terrible because his play just wouldn't deny it anymore. When Minnesota got rid of Big Al, and then Kevin Love became this 24 points, 14 rebounds player, he started making the All-Star game no matter what. Now, if Hayward next year is a 21-5-5 guy, and Favors has turned into an 18-11 guy, if they have that kind of improvement, then the Jazz are probably looking at that 8th seed in the playoffs. And if they're looking at that, then they're not the bottom. Jazz are right now, they're in the bottom area of the Western Conference. So Jazz are in the same conversation as the Lakers and the Timberwolves and who's right above us, the Kings. But next year, if we're in the conversation of the Suns and the Thunder and the teams right in that area, then they have a lot better chance of getting an all-star talk. And when you're getting an all-star talk, you'll start getting all-star calls.
Good point. No, and you'll probably, what you said is probably going to happen. I mean, you look at, you talk about the improvements, favors both of them. I mean, Hayward's obviously shown improvement over the entire season to this point, but Favors of late has been a monster. I don't know if you have the numbers and can back me or bring this up on me, but what was it the other day was mentioned? He's gone how many games in a row where he scored double-digit rebounds and double-digit points? The first time.
Wasn't he at 20-10 in the last three games?
Yeah.
Until his injury?
Yeah, something like that. In fact, I thought it was more than three games, but somebody was saying the other day it's the first time that the Jazz have had a 20-10 guy in that many games since
Jefferson. Well,
yeah, since Jefferson. Yeah. So Favors is coming on, and that okay, that bodes well for the question back at the earlier part of the show we talked about with Gobert. I wonder if Gobert's presence on the floor is allowing Favors to do that more too. You know, you talked about Cantor's offense getting better. I wonder if Cantor's offense getting better on the floor with Favors prevents Favors from doing what he's doing. Now you're on the floor with Gobert, so now Favors is getting more featured looks on the offensive end. Is that part of it, maybe, John?
Yeah, maybe, but I just had to go back to something because I looked it up. Gordon Hayward is actually sixth in the NBA in made free throws.
Wow.
It doesn't seem like it, but yeah, no. He actually is. He's getting his share. Here are the free throw made free throw leaders. James Harden at 293, far above everybody else. Jimmy Butler is second with 230. Kobe Bryant with 189. Blake Griffin with 187. Mark Gasol with 185. Gordon Hayward with 180.
Whoa.
Now, some of these other guys aren't there because they've missed some games. But, yeah, Hayward's making the most of his chances.
All right, everybody, you've heard it. Throw my argument out the door. It's gone. It's blowing off in the wind. It doesn't matter anymore. Hayward is getting the calls. But you're right.
In fact,
it doesn't.
I'm going to do this. I'm going to go through the league leaders and tell you where the Jazz are showing up. If any Jazz players are showing up in the league leader category. Minutes played. Hayward is fifth in the NBA. Will that help? You play that many minutes, you're going to get free throws.
Yes, you will.
Let's see. Made field goals. I don't see anybody. And these are all top 20. Field goal attempts. There's Hayward at number 18. He's 18th most field goal attempts. Made two-pointers. Derek Favors is at 11th. Two-point attempts. Not seeing anybody from the Jazz. Made three-pointers. I would be shocked if anyone from the Jazz is here, and they are not. Three-point attempt. No one from the Jazz. Missed field goals. Oh, that's funny. Kobe leads the missed field goals. And Gordon is 16th in missed field goals, and Trey is 17th.
Hashtag, please, Kobe, stop shooting.
So, made free throws, Gordon is 6th. No other Jasmine. Free throw attempts, Gordon is 7th. Offensive rebounds, Derek Favors is 15th. Enes Kanter is 18th. Even missing those four games, Enes Kanter is in the top 20 for offensive rebounds. Defensive rebounds, nobody. Total rebounds, Derek Favors, number 14. Assist. I don't think any of our guys would be an assist.
I wouldn't expect it.
I think Gordon's our leading assist guy, and he's 4 point something.
Well, and the Jazz are good as a team assisting. I don't think you have guys that are stand out on that.
Yeah. I think Trey's averaging 5 a game right now.
Yes. I just looked at that earlier, 5.1.
No one in steals, but in blocks, Rudy Gobert is 4th in blocks. Which is impressive considering the amount of minutes he's actually played. In fact, Derek Favors is 13th in the league in blocks.
Wow.
So we got two guys in the top 13 in blocks. And this is total blocks, not blocks per game. Total turnovers, James Harden. Anyone from the Jazz? Gordon Hayward is 14th.
Way to throw personal James Harden foul. Names in there.
Do you think we have anyone in personal foul?
No.
No, we do not. Points. Got it. Oh, no. Total points. Gordon Hayward is 13th. He is right between LeBron James and Carmelo Anthony for total points.
Oh, well, wow, look at that. Three small forwards all at the same category, same area.
Field goal percentage, Derek is 8. And Enes Kanter is 18th. 2-point percentage, Derek Favors is 14th. 3-point percentage, I don't even have to look. Free throw percentage, nobody. Minutes per game, Gordon's got to be in here. Gordon is 16th.
Okay.
And he's at 35.3. You know, this is the year where we're really not seeing. You used to see a lot of guys, not a lot of guys. You'd see about your top 12 or 14 players. You would see them be averaging 40 minutes a game. And that's really rare now. I think coaches are a lot better with managing their players' minutes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have Tom Thibodeau, who's running Jimmy Butler into the ground. But beyond that, coaches are being pretty good about that. So you have someone like Gordon, who's averaging 35.3 minutes a game. And when it comes to wins, you actually wish he'd played more. But he's 16th in the league. So.
And I want to... I would love to go back to Jerry Sloan and John Stockton to say, hey, everybody, I think the minutes management started way back then with Jerry Sloan. And I'm going to give Jerry Sloan credit. Maybe I shouldn't. But do you remember towards the latter end of his career just how well he could manage his minutes and bring in Howard Eisley to play well and play, you know, and John would play, you know, 30 minutes a game his final, what, 4, 5, 6 seasons and was great.
Yeah. Yeah, it was always important for the Jazz to have a good backup point guard because that point guard was going to get minutes. That point guard was going to be playing at least 15 minutes a game.
So,
Gordon is 19th in points per game. Rebounds per game, Derek is 15th. Assists per game, nobody. Steals per game, nobody. Blocks per game, Rudy Stips, and that's going to keep going up.
Yes, it will.
As long as he starts, and Derek is 16th.
And notice Rudy's right up there at 4th and 5th in those two block categories, and he's only started how many games now? A total of what, 3 or 4 games he started
four
all season?
Four or five. Didn't Derek miss a game somewhere back there?
Yeah, I think so. So not you're not even at a half a dozen
Actually,
games that
Trevor
Rudy
probably started, but yeah,
not even a half dozen games that Rudy started at, and he's up there in the top 5 in blocks, total blocks and blocks per game. That just tells you what he's doing on the floor right now.
Yeah, even if he goes back to the bench and Quinn just juggles the minutes. If he still lets Rudy get at least 20 minutes a game, you could see Rudy become the blocks per game champion over Anthony Davis, even with that limited minutes, because he's just so good at it. PER, Derek is 12.
Really?
Yeah.
What's his PER?
Had a really good all-around game, 22.9.
That's very impressive.
Yeah, his extension was a good one. Let's see. True shooting percentage, nobody. Efficient field goal percentage. Derek Favors is 20th. Actually, Rudy would be on these lists, but he hasn't shot enough to get up there because he only takes 1 or 2 shots a game.
Right.
Offensive rebounding percentage, Rudy is 7th. Ennis is 13th. Defensive rebounding percentage, Rudy is 20th. I hope people are enjoying this. Total rebound percentage, Rudy is 8th.
I know I'm enjoying
percentage,
this.
We have nobody in assist percentage. I don't think we're going to have anyone in steals. Block percentage, Rudy, number one, 8.3, more than 2 points ahead of anybody else. That's the Rudy effect. Anthony Davis is number two in block percentage at 6.1. Rudy is number one at 8.3.
And it, for those who didn't hear that Salt City Hoop show from the other day, Ben and Andy talked about his percentage of blocks, or his percentage. What was that percentage they brought out where the points, what was it? He's at 4.5 points off of 36. What was it? Do you remember?
No, I'm not sure what you're talking about.
They were talking about how many points he is preventing per 36 minutes. It was like four and a half or something like that. And he's like double what the number three and four spots are on that list.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's totally insane.
That bears out. Yeah, that's true.
So.
I'm not seeing. Let's see. Offensive win shares, Derek is 16th. Defensive win shares. Nobody. Total win shares, nobody, which is understandable because of their record.
Right.
Box score plus minus, Rudy Gobert is 12.
Wow.
Yeah. Keep Rudy in the game. Offensive box plus minus, nobody. Defensive, Rudy is third. Defensive box plus minus, Rudy Gobert is third behind Draymond Green and Tim Duncan.
Wow. Hall of Fame. Hall of Famer at the top of the list, and then there sits Rudy.
Yeah. And then value over replacement player, nobody. Nobody, but I do see some ex-Jasmine. Wesley Matthews, Paul Millsap, Kyle Korver.
Oh, quit thinking about...
I really wish I could go back in time and see what would have happened with the Jazz if Sloan had just finished out the season and they had hired a different coach, what might have been with Millsap.
Yeah.
But we'll never know. All right, let's... I kind of really wandered off with that one. Let's look at the week ahead.
That's okay that you wandered off. It's quite all right. There's nothing wrong with rambling off and wandering off. It's good. So we've got, coming up, we have Golden State coming into town, and then we have the Lakers coming to town, and then we're at the Spurs next Sunday.
Yep.
Should we just ignore the Golden State game? We won't even talk about that because we know what'll happen, or do we really think that maybe the Jazz can hang in that game?
Well, it's okay to mention just because no one on earth expects the Jazz to walk into Chicago and beat them by 20.
True that.
I mean, Chicago had won 9 of their last 10. Everything was clicking for them. And then the Jazz walked in and just embarrassed them. So I am actually to the point this season where, you know, we could actually have a showing. Now, Golden State is the best team in the NBA. So... yeah, they'll probably lose.
with likely the best player in the NBA on their team right now. It's sad that we're saying the best player or MVP and it's not LeBron or Durant, but right now Steph Curry is like serious. If we could put Rudy Gobert to guard the point guard position during that game, I wonder if that would do any good. Prevent Steph Curry from putting up some of the ridiculous shots that he does.
Now, I mean, the Warriors, some of it's going to depend on who's healthy. I know they've had some in and out issues. It looks like Bogut is back. So I guess there's not any question. It looks like they're going to be fully healthy. So yeah, they'll be scary and difficult, and I would be very, very impressed if they could somehow pull off that win. But it's probably going to be like a 115-100 game.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows? Jazz could surprise us. Actually, I'm going to do this real quick. I'm going to go back to the teams. I've been looking at the Jazz over the last 13 games. In that period, in the same period, the Warriors are the number one offense and the number four defense. This is a really good team. That would be just mighty, mighty impressive. In fact, if I go by net rating, the Warriors are far and above better than everybody else over this last 3 or 4 weeks. So that would be just, that would instantly replace Chicago as the best win of the season if they could somehow pull that off. And the Warriors are looking like they're going to be the Western representatives in the NBA final.
Yeah. And I'm still having a hard time swallowing that. This is the team that's been historically bad. I mean, their best years prior to this were Chris Mullin years at the end of the 80s and early 90s with Don Nelson at the helm. I'm having a hard time with this, John. Really?
Well, it's been coming for a while. I mean, there was that glorious year where the Jazz played them in the second round.
Yeah, with Baron Davis.
With Baron Davis, but man, that was such a fun series.
Yeah, it was.
And the Jazz were able to win, and that was great. And then they kind of had to fall off a little bit, and then they got Steph. And then Mark Jackson got them from terrible to playoffs. And now Steve Kerr is going to take them from playoffs to contender.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's been one thing that's amazing. I mean, even with Mark Jackson, you know, we all hate Mark Jackson. But he was able to get the players to believe in themselves.
Yep.
But he was also exposed to be not a very good X's and O's coach. Because when you have that many good offensive weapons, your offense should really be better.
Right.
And the hiring of Kerr wound up being a really smart move. It was a risky move because we really don't know how he was going to be as a head coach. You just kind of have a pretty good idea. But he hadn't actually been a head coach before, but he has paid off in every way they hoped. Kerr's really good at X's and O's, and he's really good at keeping the players motivated. And well, you know, right now, I'd pick Golden State to win the West.
Well, and don't forget too that during just along the way there between Mark Jackson and Steve Kerr, Golden State, with all the moves they made, the Jazz benefit with some picks and other teams. With all the moves they make, they bring in a guy like Andrew Iguodala, who coming in was known as a premier defender at his position, who comes in and plays off the bench, mind you, but meshes with the rest of the team. You know, Iggy's turned out to be something pretty special for them, too. He's a veteran. He doesn't get a lot of time, but he comes in and makes – I think he's kind of the gel of that team.
Yeah, Iggy's been huge. I mean, what the Warriors had to do, they had to draft smart.
Yep.
And they draft Steph Curry, they draft Klay Thompson, they draft Harrison Barnes, who's really come along this year. They made good trades, so they were able to trade off their wastes of Jefferson and Biedrins to us so that they could make room to get Iguodala.
Yep.
And that's paying off. And you know, now they have a coach who can really take them to the next level. So, you know, they've done everything right.
Yeah, they have.
Now, after the Warriors, you have the Lakers.
Swaggy P.
And that should be an entertaining game. I don't know if Kobe's going to play in that game. I think he's sitting out right now, or is he back?
I don't know. Devin, have you seen whether Kobe's back or not?
Last I heard, they were limiting his minutes, but I don't know if he's sitting out games still or
okay.
not.
Okay, I'm checking injury report, and he's not on the injured report, so I think he's back.
Well, I bring Devin in on this one a little bit, too, because of his immense love affair for Mr. Swaggy P, Nick Young.
How can you not love Swaggy P?
Yeah, well, that's what Devin says to me as well.
If you're looking for something worth reading, I would go check out the tweets that were sent out by one of the Lakers reporters last week of the interaction between Swaggy and Jeremy Lin. They are classic. Actually, I'll throw those into the morning shoot around for this week. That way people can check those out.
Awesome.
Well, there you go. The Swaggy P Love Corner. We're all set now. Oh, gosh. Well, what do you expect out of that game? Jazz should win that game?
Yeah. Jazz should kill him. But the reason why they should kill him is that the Jazz's defense has really improved of late. And the only way the Lakers can win is if their offense just really gets on fire, which does not happen that often, which is why they have a worse record than the Jazz. But ever since Nick Young actually joined the lineup, it wasn't that deep in the season. I think it was 10 games in the season when he joined. The Lakers just looked like a different team. But they got killed against the Clippers. They got killed against the Blazers. They beat the Magic at home, but the Magic have been having problems lately. I'm just kind of going through the Lakers' road games. They're just not a good road team. They have a series of home games before they come against the Jazz, so maybe they'll get some confidence up with those home games. The Blazers should kill them, but they have the Heat and the Cavs, and the Heat and the Cavs are not scary. Neither of them are doing that well, so...
I don't know what gives you that impression.
It'll be when the Lakers finally show up.
All right. So at this point in time, it's 1-1 on this week. So then the Jazz, they get three days off between Golden State and Lakers, 2 days, 3 days, something like that. And then they get another couple of days off between the Lakers, and they go on the road at the reigning world champion Spurs.
They beat the Spurs before, so we know it's possible. Anything's possible.
Anything is possible. But are they going to beat the Spurs this time around is the question. I mean, the Spurs, you know what blows my mind is this is how so good the West is and how really that good Golden State is. The Spurs are in, what, the seventh seed or eighth? Seventh seed, I think. And they're at 22-15? I mean,
yeah.
What the heck? That's... I mean, the West is that good, but that's just how much better Golden State is than everybody else, too.
Well, you know, Pop rested some players during games that he expected to lose, but then they've had losses that they just didn't expect. The Jazz, for one.
Yeah.
They've found it harder. Now, I think it'll be okay. I mean, I can see the Spurs finishing, you know, fifth or sixth in the West. And just being a scary opponent in the playoffs because they'll be rested and healthy like last year.
Because they're the Spurs.
Age. Yeah, because they're the Spurs. How can you count out the Spurs?
Exactly. What do you see in that game? How do you, you know, that's next Sunday. It's a week from tonight. I guess it depends on who the Spurs rest in that game, maybe. But... If the Spurs
play all their guys, then I think they'll win.
And if the Jazz continue to start Gobert,
injuries are key. It'll be an ugly game, but I just think the Spurs are smart enough that they're not going to lose to us again. I can't let that happen.
No,
I think it would be great. I mean, it also depends how the Jazz are rolling. If they get blown out by the Warriors and they somehow blow the game against the Lakers, they might be reeling by then. And then who knows what their mentality will be when they go into the Spurs. But, you know, they've been winning enough of late that I think they'll be okay. I think the Jazz are going to be like a... I'd say they probably win 45% of the rest of their games. Barring any other serious injuries.
It's not a bad percentage.
Well, they're winning over 50% of their last 13, so. But as I look at their schedule, I see more losses coming. But
oh, yeah.
I'm also seeing from the Jazz that there can be some surprise wins. You know, surprise win against the Bulls or surprise win against the Spurs or games that are toss up that go the Jazz way. So,
right. All right. Is there anything else you wanted to cover?
Well, I'm debating. I think we've been talking a while, so Devin, I'd probably appreciate it if we wrap it up.
Yes, this is true.
Let's go ahead and stop there. And, isn't there a thing Wednesday?
Wednesday. What's Wednesday?
Oh, I'm going to an autograph thing. That's what it was.
Ah. All right. Well, we'll wrap up another show. We didn't get a chance to talk about movies for yet the second straight show. We're going to have to pick that up again. We're slacking on our movie duties. But tonight was extra special fun because we got to listen to John give the full rundown of stats, and I'm okay with that.
Well, I'll do this briefly then. Over the weekend, I saw Selma and I saw Annie. And I would give Selma a thumbs up and Annie a thumbs down.
So Selma is a must-see.
Selma's pretty good. It's not my favorite movie of the year, but I could see it getting nominated for some things. And there's one sequence that's just really, really powerful. And sadly enough, Selma feels very, very timely. With all the talk about race relations in the country this year, Selma feels very timely.
That's a good point. I've heard the same.
Hit the cough button.
That's right. I've heard the same thing about Annie that you're telling me to from another movie critic, a friend of mine, who said the same thing. So,
they said it in Modern Times, and there are just things that just don't translate to our time.
Nope.
Doesn't work.
Somehow I get the feeling I'm going to end up seeing it one way or another because my kids want to see it, and you know, kids win sometimes when it comes to movies. But I really have no desire to. So, all right, there you have it, folks. Another episode of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz in the books. We hope you enjoy listening to us. Give us your feedback on Twitter. You can find John on Twitter at germsguy, at J-E-R-M-S-G-U-Y, germsguy. Or you can find me on Twitter at JediZog. Or we've got our show on Twitter. What did we call it? Jedi and Germs. Jedi and A-N-D Germs. So tweet at us, holler at us, let us know what you think and anything else you want to talk about. Also, we want to give props out to Grant and Torn by Sports for helping take care of us and keep us out there, keep us rolling. And also a big thanks to Justin Dahl, Dalai Lama on Twitter. We're going to have ourselves a logo that will be sporting here over the next week, thanks to him and the fine work that he does. So thanks everybody for listening. John, you get to take us out again.
Bye, everybody.
Talk to you later, John.